guys, you're listening to Sheer Crime. I'm Kenzie.
And I'm Amy.
Today, we are bringing you yet another story from our home state. This is the ninth episode in our series we like to call Minisodes. Amy will be sharing the case with us today. Like you, I have not heard it, so without further ado, I'll hand it over to you.
Why, thank you. I just love the rhyme.
Me too.
Rhyme.
That's why we kept it, you guys. It's perfect.
Yeah, we decided to keep our intros easy peasy with these Minisodes. Because then I don't have to catch you up on the story. You don't have to catch me up.
Nope, we're good to go.
It just leads us right in. Okay, so today's episode is going to be on Natasha Wayland. Now, I actually heard about this case through another podcast.
Interesting.
Sword and Scale did two episodes on it. I believe it was episode 184 and 185.
Why have I not heard of this?
Sword and Scale?
No, I mean this case. This name does not ring a bell to me.
I don't know, but nope, I have nothing else. I don't know. There should have been something there, but I had nothing. So I listened to the episode and I was like, holy shit, this is Minnesota.
Yeah.
We're going to use this. I ended up collecting my information that I'm going to talk about through three websites, the StarTribune.com, TwinCities.com, and NPRNews.org. So I kind of flipped between the three. Natasha Wayland was a 28-year-old woman living in Anoka, Minnesota, with her live-in boyfriend, Ryan Boland. They had been together for approximately 11 years. And their daughter, Savannah, who was about 4 at the time. Natasha was known to be the it girl. So she was super pretty, really smart, very kind, and really had it all together. And all of her friends and anyone who knew her said that she always championed for the underdogs of the world. So she was that girl that if she saw somebody being picked on the playground, she would go stand up for that person.
Yeah.
She was just one of those. She really did seem to struggle, though, with standing up for herself, as is too common in the traits of victims of domestic violence.
Right.
Yes. So this is a story of domestic violence.
I kind of saw it going in that direction. It just makes me sad.
Yeah. So on September 19 of 2008, 2 days after Natasha had told a coworker that she had planned to seek out an order for protection against her boyfriend, Ryan, stating that she, quote, feared for her life, her body and crashed motorcycle were discovered on a street in Andover, Minnesota. The problem was, is that her injuries seemed far too much for the very little damage that was done to her bicycle.
No, okay, I was going to say, it's a bicycle, not like a motorcycle.
Nope, I said bicycle, I meant motorcycle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a motorcycle. So something I didn't write down here because it wasn't in any of the newspapers that I was reading but heard on the podcast is that Natasha was really big into her motorcycle. She had grown up on bikes.
Yeah.
She rode her bike to and from work. I mean, she was a motorcycle girl. So she was on it a lot and she had been riding for as far back.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It's really a part of her.
Right. You might even know, like, some of those kids who grew up on, you know, dirt bike kids.
Mm-hmm.
They grew up riding two wheels all the time. So that was her. So, yeah, they found her body and her crashed motorcycle.
So that's really interesting. So they immediately know that something doesn't look right. How the hell do you set something like that up?
Well, not very well. Let's put it that way.
I mean, a crash and then it's more than that. That seems... Okay, continue.
Well, here's the other thing. She was also discovered barefoot, okay?
What?
Do you know anybody who would ride a motorcycle barefoot?
No.
No, because of two things, right? Well, three. If we're going to count safety of possible road rash, right? That's why you normally wear, like, boots to protect your feet.
Yeah.
But also, those pedals and a lot of the parts of the engine that are right next to that get really hot.
Right. And don't motorcycle people have to put their feet on the ground when they get to like stop signs and like stoplights and things like that? Like they have to balance their bike when they're not moving.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Completely off from the get-go.
But yeah, weird. And a lot of times too, those pedals have like little ridges in them.
Yes.
To like give you some grip so your foot doesn't just slide off.
Right.
So in any which way you look at it, this is not very likely for an experienced rider to be riding like this, but also not logical when you think about all of the things we just talked about. With that in mind, it was quickly determined that this accident had been staged. Natasha is also known very well through her family and friends as Tasha, so I will be referring to her as Tasha probably through the rest of this episode. But Tasha had told childhood friend Scott Kalpakov how afraid she was of her boyfriend Ryan, and that he'd once even tried to strangle her and had threatened to kill her if she ever left him or took their daughter away. So we already know there was some physical abuse in the relationship.
Oh my gosh, that just makes my heart hurt. I can't imagine the type of fear someone lives with day to day with someone like that.
Right, especially in a small town where you have nowhere to go.
Right.
And on at least three separate occasions, Tasha had told the Anoka police that she had been physically abused by Ryan. So there was also reports on it. And at one point, he did get a misdemeanor for it, but they didn't really go into a ton of detail. While Natasha appeared to have not had an enemy in the world because of how highly people spoke of her, Ryan's younger brother, Timothy Boland, also known as Tim, was known to dislike Tasha and had even assaulted her once, blaming her for ruining his brother's life.
Wow.
Right.
What fucking cowardly men, both of them.
Very much so.
What type of household did they grow up in? Probably a real shitty one.
Actually, they grew up in a fairly nice household from what I remember hearing on the podcast.
Okay.
It wasn't like these two were like growing up on their own. It sounds more like they were coddled and just kind of allowed to be who they were. And in this case, shitty people.
Oh, God, that even makes it fucking worse.
Right. Classmates were even known to have talked about them as being bullies back in high
school. Yeah, I can see that.
Right. So to me, it reminds me of, and I don't know if they were jocks. I'm going to assume they might have been in some way, shape, or form. But it reminds me of like that jock who's like a bully, but he's not even that good at his sport. But he's just a dick to everybody. Yeah. You know these people. Yes. They peak in high school.
Yes.
And that's it.
And that's it. They never get better.
And they lead mediocre lives after that.
Yes.
Right? So that's what I think of when I think of these two. Now, on that September night, Ryan and Tasha had been kind of in an argument in their garage. At the time, Tim had been also living with them. So the three of them are out in the garage. Ryan and Tim had both been at the bar earlier that night and had come home. Tasha comes out to the garage and joins the two. Tasha had apparently confronted Timothy about setting up her father and her brother in like a drug sting, as Tim had apparently worked as a drug informant after being arrested for narcotics-related crimes earlier that year. So I'm not sure if one of her family members tried to buy some and he like ratted them out. Again, it didn't really go into that much detail. And we're also having this information given to us as like hearsay.
That really seems complex and volatile. Quick.
It's small town shit is kind of where it, what it sounds like to me. But essentially, Tasha starts kind of confronting Timothy about this. And at one point, she says that she's going to call her brother and tell him what she knew about what Tim had done to him. Ryan grabbed her wrist to keep her from making this phone call, to which she scratches at him to get her wrist away. All the while this is happening, Tim sat on a chair in the garage wrapping a baseball bat in black duct tape.
Oh, Jesus. This is getting dark quick.
Yeah. Tasha then begins to threaten to call Tim's wife and inform her that he had been having an affair. This sent him over the edge.
Of course it did. Why would she do that?
I don't know.
Oh no, if she saw him with the bat, like, just don't say anything right now.
And Tim snapped.
Oh, Jesus.
Ryan allegedly witnessed his brother, Tim, rise up from the chair and repeatedly strike her in the skull with this duct-taped baseball bat multiple times.
Oh my God.
Not only that, after clubbing her several times in the head, she falls to the floor, where he then kicks her in the face, as if she needed anything more.
Oh my God.
I know.
Oh, I hope these fuckers are rotting.
Ryan claims that at that point, after she's on the ground and not responsive, he steps out of the garage to go check on their sleeping daughter, who he'd soon be leaving home alone for approximately 25 minutes while they disposed of her body. She's 4.
Oh my God, that poor little girl alone with those two boys. Oh my God.
Yeah. The brothers ended up placing Tasha's body and her motorcycle in the back of Ryan's Chevy pickup truck and headed towards Andover, which is about 3 to 4 miles away from Anoka, with the tailgate open, by the way. Tim was driving, which I find weird, but he was driving the vehicle, and at about 50 miles an hour, jerking the wheel a couple of times here and there until her body and the bike fall off the bed of the truck, just as they had planned, to make it look like a crash. Okay, but if she crashed, wouldn't you see skid marks of some point?
Right.
Right? From the tire.
Well, and the scene that they wanted it to appear as, they couldn't recreate that, right? I mean, I was confused when you told me that that's how they found her, like as if it was a, you know, motorcycle accident. I'm like, how do you stage that? Yeah, they didn't think it through. Yeah. It was last minute. Of course, this was a anger, heat of the moment type of thing. I mean, I think he already had planned on it. I think it was premeditated beforehand if he's wrapping it in the duct tape around the bat. I think he was already thinking that he was going to do something, but then she said something that sent him over the edge, and I don't know how you could do that to someone. How could you hit someone in the fucking skull with a baseball bat?
Well, and also my thought too went a little bit more like simple as far as like why the duct tape around the bat? Like what was the point of the duct tape around the bat?
Who knows?
Is that a thing?
I've never heard of it.
I mean, I've heard of wrapping it around like the handle, right? Like,
yeah.
So that maybe you don't get splinters or maybe it gives it a little bit more grip. But like, I just don't understand it. And no. Was he doing it with the intention of maybe, they don't say if it was a wooden bat. Did they do that with the intention of it maybe not breaking to keep it together more?
Or maybe not. Or
absorbing blood?
I was going to say, maybe not leaving as much evidence behind.
Yeah.
So say he wrapped the whole entire thing in duct tape, right?
Yeah.
Who knows how far he went down.
Right. Okay? They don't say.
So it could be the whole entire bat. So then they could easily take the duct tape off, dispose of that. Put the bat back, it would never look like anything ever happened with that bat.
Right. Right? It'd be an easy way.
So maybe it was a form of them trying to cover their tracks, premeditation, before they ended up committing the murder. I mean, still, her blood is probably on the floor in that garage.
Right.
Come on. He hit her in the head with a bat.
Right. And heads bleed.
Yes.
A lot.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Right.
Horrible.
After they disposed of her body, Ryan returns to the garage, rips out the bloodied carpet that was on the floor of that garage, places the baseball bat in newspaper, and allegedly stashes it in a dumpster at an Anoka car wash. They never found it.
Interesting.
The next morning, he took his daughter to school, who is now in the custody of Natasha's sister and her husband, by the way.
Oh, like today?
Yeah.
Oh,
I believe they adopted her.
Perfect.
Yeah. Later that day, when questioned by police, Ryan lied about knowing what had happened the night before. When Natasha was found, nearly 50 feet from her motorcycle, there was also a red strap tied around her body and her arms, defensive wounds to the back of her hands, and 3 wounds to her forehead. So all of it was just weird. It was too weird.
And it didn't make sense with what an actual motorcycle crash would be. Yes, you might have head trauma. You might have other things. You're going to have skid marks on your skin. It's
right.
Because you're going to slide off at some point. Like,
or shoes.
Right. You're going to have shoes on. I mean, they definitely did not think that through at all.
No, no. And the other thing, too, is that at one point they had said that the 3 of them had been drinking in a garage. One of the reports stated that that's what they said. But an autopsy did not show any alcohol in her system.
Okay, so it was just them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Timothy Bolin ended up pleading guilty to beating Natasha to death and was sentenced to 11 years in prison in May of 2010. pleading guilty to first-degree manslaughter.
Are you fucking kidding me?
He had originally been charged with second-degree murder. Ryan Boland, the boyfriend, received 8 years in June of 2010 for aiding an offender as an accomplice after the fact for the death of his girlfriend. Ryan had also originally been charged with second-degree murder. Both boys pled to the lesser charge, as far as guilty was concerned.
Are they out now?
Yes.
These fuckers are roaming our street right now.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So Paul Young, the head of the violent crimes investigations in Anoka County's criminal division, said that they were, quote, frustrated by the result, but bound by the evidence. So keep in mind, murder, it is very difficult to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, especially with the brothers blaming each other. So it's,
sure.
He said, and that key evidence of the baseball bat missing.
Oh my God.
They can't exactly prove that it was murder.
That makes me so mad.
It's annoying to say the least, right? Like, how? How does somebody lose their life and these fuckers don't even get 20 years? Not even 20, which is too short, in my opinion,
for
anyway.
Me, if you take a life, you give your life. I don't care. Like, it's a life for a life at that point.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't mean killing them and sentencing to death, but I'm sorry. That person never gets to live again. Like,
right.
Maybe the boyfriend, he would get a lesser charge. Sure, he didn't actually commit the murder.
As far as we know.
But Timothy, the brother, if he was the one that actually committed the murder, he should be sentenced to life in prison. I don't care what degree it is.
Agreed.
You took someone's life. Like,
yep.
Why isn't that the law?
And it clearly wasn't for, like, self-defense.
Right. Right. This was fully fucking premeditated.
I'm sorry. He had the upper hand.
Yeah.
I mean, and it was 2-1.
Exactly.
Natasha Wayland was a dedicated mother, friend, daughter, and sister. She had had her master's degree and, at the time, worked with developmentally challenged adults and as an acupuncturist at a local chiropractic clinic. She was working hard. She was trying to be a good mom. She was trying to get her, you know,
so
trying to take care
tragic.
Of things. This is just another story of a life taken far too early by two selfish bullies for no reason other than hot heads, mismanaged tempers, and a deep sense of entitlement in my opinion.
So selfish on their end to do that, especially to the daughter. The poor daughter never will get to know her mom, or her mom
right.
will never get to see her accomplishments in life, you
yeah.
know? And that's also really sad.
It's like, awful.
Not only did she lose her life, but now she doesn't get to see her daughter grow up. And that sucks.
Yeah.
Especially when it's these fucking bastards that now get to live their fucking life. That makes me goddamn mad. And they're roaming our goddamn streets.
Yep.
Okay, where the fuck are they? Are they being monitored? What is happening? Because they're for sure on parole.
I could not find anything about that.
Oh.
Literally, I scoured, could not find anything. But both brothers are out of prison and seem to be living their best lives according to pictures that were posted on the Sword and Scale Facebook page in early April. So they look like they are just living it up. My guess is they probably got a little bit of time knocked off.
They probably did not
serve their full 8 and 11 years.
Especially when it's not life in prison. Like, people always get off on good behavior, whatever it is. And it's because our justice system and our correctional facility system is so jam-packed with people that shouldn't fucking be there on drug charges and whatever else.
Right.
That should be, get the fuck out of there so we can actually have the real fucking killers in prison where they should be spending the rest of their goddamn life.
100%.
Like, no one should be in fucking jail for selling weed. Get them
never
the fuck out
right.
of the prison system. This is the problem. Like, there is people in prison right now on drug charges that are staying in prison longer than people who've killed someone.
Yeah.
How the fuck does that work?
Yeah.
This is what's wrong with our justice system. This is
big time.
Right here.
Big time.
This is the fucking problem.
It is the problem.
We figured it out, people.
Yeah, we figured it out. No need to keep searching. So, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I wish there was, like, a better outcome to this, but that's unfortunately where I leave you.
Oh, man. Well, thank
you. These fucking suck.
All of these suck. I mean, murders yeah. and senseless murders are just horrible, especially when they're young people that had so much life to live. I mean, no one getting murdered is good, but especially young people, it's just tough to kind of stomach. But thank you for sharing this story with us and doing this research on this Minnesota. I am going to be sharing one of our reviews from one of our listeners today. So we got a review on Apple Podcasts from CAD71171, and they state, "Love these ladies. Great podcast. Sound quality is awesome. They speak clearly, and they are so fun to listen to. Highly recommend."
Ooh.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's just, I love to hear that we are doing something that entertains people, even just slightly once a week. It makes my week better. It makes me happier, and I'm sure it does for you as well.
Absolutely.
And all of this and everything that we do is obviously for our listeners. So again, we appreciate all of you and love you all very much.
We sure do.
If you could and you haven't yet, please go out and leave a review. We would love to read your review on one of our Minnesotes.
Yes. And as far as I know, we only see the ones on Apple Podcasts, right? Here so, for the United States.
We do utilize this website called Chartable that we are able to see Apple Podcast reviews in other countries as well.
Yeah.
But yes, mainly we only get alerted for the iTunes or Apple Podcast reviews. I do try to search other podcast apps. Yeah. They make it a little bit tougher to find your reviews.
How lame.
I know. It kind of stinks. But either way, I mean, we love any feedback that anyone can give us. So if you could, we would love a 5-star rating with a review.
Absolutely. And if you have given one on another podcast platform, maybe take a screenshot of it. Send it to us.
Yeah, in an email.
Yeah.
Send it to requests@sharecrimepodcast.com. We would love to shout you out.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, we just can't see them all because, again, they make it kind of difficult for us to do so.
Yeah, so we're not ignoring it.
No, we're not. We promise. Now, if you want to follow us on social media, you can find us on Instagram @share_crime_podcast. We are on Twitter @sharecrimepod. We are on TikTok @sharecrimepodcast. And we have our Facebook group, Share Crime Podcast Discussion Group. We will be back next week with a full-length episode, and we hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your week.
Yeah.
Stay safe, stay sane, and remember, never run with scissors. Bye, guys.
Bye.